On March 7th, 2015, I walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge along with thousands of others. That day marked the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights March from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama. That march where brave ancestors of color marched for justice. The modern celebration was nothing like that day in 1965. Long gone were the dogs, the fire hoses, the horses. Long gone was the fear of what was lying in wait just over the crest of the bridge at midspan. And mostly gone are the leaders from that day. Still lasting is the bridge. Still lasting is the name Edmund Pettus, a Grand Duke of the Ku Klux Klan. Still lasting are the scars and the scarred memories. Still lasting is the violence, not just physical, but vile racism, harsh economic injustices, and systematic dismantling of worth and dignity. Still lasting is the work yet to be done. Still lasting is the legacy that it can be done. If the moral arc of the universe, however long, bends toward justice, the fulcrum might as well be the crest of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. The bridge itself is short. Have you ever been there? The bridge is actually pretty short. It's a small river that it spans. But the rise is steep. You cannot see from one side to the other. Just like the arc of justice. And on that bridge, smack dab in the middle of the overhead support structure, enshrined in steel typeface, is the name that represents white supremacy in all of its hooded, cross-burning, and hideous evil. That name and the simmering racist sentiment that lingers rises high over the arc, righteously vanguarding the past that was for many never great, never fair, and never just. It still isn't, even today. If we want to make America great again, then we need to reach for our highest ideals and make it great for the many, not just the few. Now, I don't pretend to know all the injustices of the world. I don't even know how they all feel. I am white, I am privileged, but among other things, being a woman and growing up gay in the Bible Belt, I have experienced enough pain from this world that I can do the empathetic expansion to imagine what it might feel like. I can know that Martin Luther King was correct. An injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I must work to keep others from suffering the pain of injustice and hatred. My liberal faith, my Unitarian Universalist faith, calls me to do the work. If the people crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge 50 years ago were brave enough to march to the crest of that bridge, filled with determination that mastered their fear, then I have no excuse not to do what I can do. They faced dogs, fire hoses, horses, and officers with billy clubs, not to mention lynching, torture, and murder. For me, and for us, an inconvenient schedule or perceived societal snub are not sufficient grounds for sitting on the sidelines. We do not have a sideline faith. In the work of justice, there is room for everyone. Martin Luther King asked, "So where do we go from here?" And we might ask ourselves, how did Columbus go from being a stop on the Underground Railroad with a destination of freedom to the number one city for police killing of black people? Here's a statistic. From 2013 to 16, the Columbus police killed 24 people. 20 of them were black. Where do we go from here? Did those brave men and women who marched over the Edmund Pettus Bridge, did they do it in vain? Or are we willing to find our own bridge that we know as racism? Are we willing to march over the crest to the other side? If Theodore Parker and Martin Luther King are correct, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it does bend toward justice. By my reckoning, going over the crest is the only way that arc can bend. Unfortunately, there are other fulcrums of injustice. Our southern border represents not just a broken immigration system, but also a political will that for decades has valued immediate gain while pushing off or dismissing longer-term chaos and harm. Make America Great Again has only intensified the breaking up of families and legitimized acts of racist hatred. Almost daily, you can read the headlines or just hear the stories of people being deported. While it might just seem like a statistical matter, these people are actually moms and dads, wage earners, and taxpayers. And very soon, the statistics will also include college graduates who only know this country as home. I've been told that in Columbus, we have a very high ratio of immigrants in our overall population, almost all of whom are at risk for deportation. And if my numbers are correct, that's 40,000 immigrants and 35,000 subject to deportation, and they add billions of dollars to our local economy. So where do we go from here? Are we willing to face our fears and inconveniences and comfort to bend the arc toward justice? Can we not just tiptoe toward that balance point, but can we stomp on it with our whole bodies hard down on the side of justice? Can we do that? Isn't that what our liberal faith calls us to do? Bend that arc. The world and those in harm's way can't afford for us to hide behind an unexamined faith or even a lack of faith. Assigning ourselves labels or separating into categories, I'm a this or a that, does not save lives. Although it can keep us occupied and be too busy to do the work that the world is calling us to do. At our root, we are all humanist in the sense that it is up to us to do the work. No divine power is going to swoop down and do the work for us and bring those moms and dads back to their children. No supernatural entity is going to erase racism in this world. Humans have to do it. No outside entity is going to give us a pass or even substitute for us doing the work. Now, I know that Unitarian Universalists, we're a smart crowd. We're well-read. We see the headlines. And we often scour deep down into the details. Some of us even have dissertations on the details. But head knowledge And theoretical empathy is not enough to change the world. It also takes our bodies and our resources to make a difference. Now, I'm not calling for us to lay our bodies down on the tracks like the Barrican brothers did to protest nuclear weapons. I'm not calling us to be like Jane Addams, Margaret Sanger, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, or Susan B. Anthony, who worked so hard for women's rights. I'm not calling us to sing like Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger, making careers out of wailing for justice. What I am asking, inviting you to, is a conversation. Can we be a church that matters? Can we be a church that makes a real difference in real people's lives? Can we be a church that helps bend that arc toward justice? Now, I know there are a million causes in this world worth fighting for. I've been to a JAM meeting, our Justice Action Ministry, JAM for short, and I am assured that they're on top of not a million, but almost a million, it seems like. They're on top of all but maybe two of the issues. They do such great work in a lot of areas. But what would it look like if the whole congregation said yes to one or two primary areas of focus every year? Don't you imagine that we can make a difference? The congregation I served for 9 years was a member of a community organizing group. One of our big successes was when we focused on one thing, immigration policy, specifically the request from ICE for jails to voluntarily hold detainees for up to 3 extra days beyond their release so that ICE could come pick them up for deportation purposes. It took a lot of work, including working with partners we might not always agree with. But it took all this work and working together, walking along beside, to come up with a draft ordinance to present to King County Council. That's the county Seattle is in. It asks that the jails no longer hold detainees for ICE. As part of the process, 2 Unitarian Universalist congregations, including the one I served, hosted assemblies with local representatives being asked to support the ordinance. Undocumented immigrants risk being publicly present at the assemblies to tell their stories about how their families were broken apart. But it wasn't just about heart. These assemblies also showed that the county was spending millions of dollars on these voluntary holds. Between the time the ordinance passed and a later judicial ruling in the ordinance's favor, the work we did saved 90 families from being broken. 90 families were spared the injustice of being torn apart. A Unitarian congregation helped save 90 families. And you're bigger than that. What can we do? Can we set aside our hesitations and become a church that matters? If so, where do we go from here? Does First UU have a place in righting the injustice not only in the world, but also right here in our community? Can we be a church that bends the arc, even if just a little bit, toward justice? And I've got good news for you. We're already doing it a little bit. Does anybody know that we're a meal train? Do you know what that is? It's pretty awesome, actually. It seems our neighbors, the Mennonite congregation down High Street here, said yes to taking in an immigrant at the last stage of deportation. They house a woman, her name is Edith. They housed her to live in the church until the ICE officials can do a final determination on her case. In the meantime, the church has to shelter her, find food for her, entertainment, health, accommodate visitation from family. She's married and has kids, who, by the way, are citizens. And they have to do so much more. And early on, the community and other churches said, yes, we'll help feed Edith and her family when they come. But the Mennonite church could not have random people just coming in their doors bringing food, because, you know, you don't know who the random person is, right? So we became a drop-off point for the food for Edith. And now we're being asked to supply some of the food as well. You're invited to do that. See Jenny or Jan after the service. But that's what's called a meal train. And I kind of see this meal train as a small version of today's Underground Railroad. And soon, very soon, the community that vets the immigrants who are up for deportation, who vets them to see if they are likely candidates to go into sanctuary, well, that group will very soon be asking First UU if we can raise our hands and say, yes, we will help as well. That call isn't this week, but it's coming. We know it's coming. So you have two opportunities to talk about it. You'll have more too. But one is this afternoon at 3, and another is Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Everyone is welcome. The world and our neighbors are calling us to be a church that matters. They're asking us, the Unitarian Universalist, to help bend that arc toward justice. And we don't just matter in the area of helping keep immigrant families together. We have also been asked by the Reverend William Barber. Does anyone know of William Barber? He's amazing. We've also been asked by Barber to be a locus for racial justice work in the city of Columbus. Can you imagine that? Here we are, a mostly white, well-to-do, well-educated congregation. We've been asked to be the locus for the work right here in Columbus, a city that matters. If I have the story right about William Barber, when he was a child, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and he asked his mother a question. He asked her, "So who does the work from here?" His mom looked around the room, seeing no one. She looked at her son and said, "I guess it's up to you." And he's doing it. He is continuing King's legacy. And we've been personally asked if we would help in that effort. Are we up for it? Do we want to be a church that matters? Will we bend that arc? I know that the only way we can do any of this is if we do the spiritual homework of grounding, that we continue to grow in depth and in community and in how we love each other, so that we have the grounding, the energy, and the fortitude to reach beyond our walls. We also have to have conversation. I'm ready for it. Are you? Amen.